The Scoop Podcast, brought to you by PPG, the official paint of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Scoop Podcast, presented by PPG. In today's episode, Sam Cassan and I sat down with Penguins Associate Head Equipment Manager John Taglianetti for a wide-ranging conversation about his path to his current career, some great stories from years of working alongside Penguins players and coaches, and, of course, equipment. Now, the last name should ring a bell in Pittsburgh. His dad, Peter, played 11 seasons in the NHL, five of which with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and was a part of the first two Stanley Cup championships in franchise history in 1991 and 92. His brother, Andrew, his twin, by the way, was a standout football player who suited up for the Pitt Panthers and even got an invite to Pittsburgh Steelers minicamp at the end of his college career. So, yeah. Sports play kind of a big role in the Taglianetti family, and John's carved out quite a spot for himself here in the Penguins organization. So now, we'll allow him to tell his story. Without further ado, here's John Taglianetti, our guest in the latest episode of the Scoop Podcast, presented by PPG.
Tags, first of all, thanks for joining us. Second of all, congratulations on the promotion, the big title.
Thank you. Seems like I've been here for a very long time, so... It's not really, still pretty young, so, but proud of it and excited, so.
Yeah, you put in a lot of hours, a lot of dirt work. It was the 13th season for you now?
Yeah, 13. Started out as a game night guy back in high school. The equipment manager at the time, Steve Latin, was good friends with my dad and reached out about getting some help, and me and my two of my brothers kind of jumped on right then. So for games, we would go down after school and work all the home games and just kind of fell in love with it from there.
And you're one of 20, right? I mean, I feel like there's a million Taglianettis in the family.
Just one of five. There is a lot of us. I got an older brother, Pat. I have a twin brother, Andrew. And Andrew and Pat, when we first started, they were involved with it. And then there's a younger set of twins, Corey and Lewis. So the twin thing kind of makes it seem like there's a lot more than there is.
But you guys all kind of did, and you hung around. What was it that made you really love this and make this want to be kind of your career endeavor?
Well, I think I love being around the rink. Like, we kind of grew up with my dad being around the rink. When we were younger and my dad was playing, we would be there, and I remember Jaromir Jagr chasing us around the rink. Like, I remember little things like that. So you kind of just... He liked it, and then as soon as I started working and you know, was able to, my dad's stories that he would always tell would kind of click being around some of the guys that were there when we first started. So I don't know what kept me going on it, but it was just, you know, here I am, so.
Especially those early 90s Penguins teams, I feel like they had a lot of stories, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's the coolest thing about hockey too, is like the stories, the camaraderie with all the older players, the alumni or whatever. Even like, you know, being around the rink, when I first started, it was like John LeClair. Like that was like, holy cow, this cool, is John LeClair. Or, you know, Rex was on that team. And, but it was just even like Mario was still playing, like still involved. That was Sid's first year. So now it's like, this is huge, like, for the city and stuff like that. So I think that kind of played into it as well.
I feel like a lot of times too with hockey players, they talk about like when they retire and stuff, the thing they miss most is that camaraderie in the dressing room, and you get to live that every day. I mean, that has to be cool, even with the current group, just to kind of be able to see that no one really sees otherwise, unless you're in your role or a player or a coach on the team, really.
Yeah, I think the locker room is kind of a sacred place almost.
And yeah.
By that, I just mean, like, it's like where these guys can be themselves. You know, it's different from what anyone would ever see on TV, the things that go on, the things that are said. It's not really like an office environment, you know, like guys are having fun. You know, I'm not sitting at a desk all day. You know, you never know what's going to come up. So, you know, just hearing the stories now and seeing how things have changed, though, for guys is pretty unique in itself.
So you're basically babysitting 23 grown men. Like, that's the attitude in the
end. I don't know if you can say they're all grown men either.
Exactly. Well, what was it like growing up? You mentioned seeing your dad and being around the locker room. Did you get the memories of him playing and things of that nature? And...
I remember very few. Like, we were pretty young. I was born in 89 in Winnipeg. And from there, my dad kind of moved around a bit. So the younger years, we don't really remember. Towards the end, I remember one time he was in a fight in the game. I remember like just being like, whoa, like what's going on? Not so much like the NHL stuff, but whenever he was with the Providence Bruins his last year, I remember going to all those games and being in the locker room there. I remember bits and pieces of being around the room, even skating. I remember a couple times before practice, we'd be out on the ice skating while the guys were kind of skating in circles and stuff like that. And, but very lucky to be in that position. Not many people get to do that stuff. And, you know, my dad worked hard. And, I mean, I'll be the first one to say the only reason I'm here is because of, you know, the hard work my dad put in and to get there. So, you know, everyone's path is different. But he definitely was a big reason why I'm still here.
And I assume you picked up the game at a young age as well. Because
we did, yeah. We always had hockey sticks, roller hockey, stuff like that. And, you know, we grew up in Pittsburgh for the most part. We moved around, but we kind of settled in Pittsburgh. And I think hockey, you know, because of, like, all of our friends would play, but I think, you know, again, my dad had a big influence on that, why all of our friends were playing hockey and why we were playing hockey. And at the time, it wasn't such a big hockey market that it is now for youth hockey.
Yeah.
Like, I've been able to see how much has changed, you know, with our new building.
And yeah, right.
The practice rink, I mean, and stuff like that, but... you know, when we were growing up, it was like the Isoplex was the main thing, you know, like
the old South Point.
Yeah, South Point, that was the big thing. So, but we kind of played every sport growing up, so kind of fell away from hockey for a little bit.
Yeah, so you gravitated towards football.
Yeah.
What was it about football that attracted you?
I think it was football was so big in Western PA. Like,
yeah.
Everyone was playing. High school football was a big thing. So everyone we went to school with kind of was all playing football. So a lot of your friends were playing football, and it just kind of, like, you wanted to be around your friends. And, you know, we were not bad at it growing up. So it was kind of, we just kept playing football. And, you know, my dad also knew growing up that if we were going to stick to hockey, you know, we probably have to move, or... You know, you'd probably have to give up all those other sports,
right,
to pursue hockey. You know, he grew up in Boston, so he'd always talk about how there was a rink in every town, you know, and Pittsburgh didn't have that. So he kind of was looking ahead and, you know, left it on us to decide, you know, if you get time, you know, high school, maybe time for you to figure out what you want to do. And football became the avenue we went.
And then you go to Pitt. And you're on the team there. I know there was a little bit of a process to start playing there, but what was that like? I mean, do you still follow them?
For sure, yeah. Follow them. Yeah. You know, when I got there, it was I was working for the team, so for the Penguins. So the trainers and stuff, I kind of had an idea of how hard they work and stuff like that. So I still keep in touch with them a lot. But other than that, a lot of those people that were there have changed. So, mm-hmm. But we still still look at it and watch it. I probably only went there because of Andrew. I'm not going to lie, but they wanted him and maybe just had to take me too. So,
yeah, how are we going to do it?
Yeah.
Package deal.
Yeah, I was there, but it was cool. It was fun. I learned a lot, just about, you know, I got to see what it would take to be a professional athlete, you know, yeah. Being with the team, with the Penguins, but being there, you just saw, it's a total different world, you know, football to hockey and stuff like that. But a lot of neat experiences. Got to stay close to home and, you know, really enjoyed every moment of it.
And then when you did start working with the Penguins, obviously 2005, you had Sidney Crosby coming, as you said, John LeClair, Mark Recchi, all these guys. What was it like actually being in that environment? I don't want to say full time, but spending a lot of time there.
Eye-opening, I would say. It was, I remember showing up to training camp, and was with my dad and my brother, and I think it was Ryan Vandenbush, you know, was out there, and he got in a fight, and I can't remember who he fought, but I remember being like...
In training camp,
like, looking at my dad, like, what the hell's going on? Like, aren't they on the same team? I was, oh, yeah, but you gotta, you know, that's what you gotta do. So that was like, I remember, that was like my first real, like, wow, like, these guys are nuts. But, you know, seeing, you know, Sid for the first, you hear, because we heard about him for years beforehand.
Right.
Like, it seemed like that's all, like, might have a chance to come here. And even when they won the draft lottery, to get him, like, it just ramped up. So right. Then you finally meet him, and it was like, whoa. You know, like, this is Mario almost, in a way.
The phenom.
Like, yeah, that, right. I mean, because up until then, you never really heard about Penguins for probably 10 years or something like that. It was just kind of like,
right.
Now it's back. So that was pretty unique.
It must have been, sorry.
Didn't Vandenbush give you a nice little shin tap too there, you and Andrew?
Yeah, he was fun. All those guys were fun, and the I wish people got to see these players' personalities, though. You know, and the things that they would do, like, you know, like little shin tap, you walking by, and they know what they're doing. Like, they know it hurts, but it makes it fun, you know. And I think that's something very unique that people don't really get to see. You know, Ryan Vandenbush gets in a fight and then comes off and thinks to, you know, tap you or, you know, whatever. It's like, something's not right there.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that first training camp, and you talk about like how the 10 years or so leading up to it, it was kind of a lull with the Penguins as far as their success. But that has to have been cool too, to come into the fold as the excitement was starting to build again. I mean, you had the established guys in there, the guys that were going to the Hall of Fame, but with Sid coming, and obviously then Gino joins not too long after that, you have that excitement kind of going upward for the Penguins.
Big time. Like, yeah. That was, I mean, people were jealous of what we were, you know, us working there. Like, wow, like, that's pretty neat. And it was, a lot of times for us, like, we would be around the room and never really, you don't really look at these guys any different growing up around it. But, you know, that time it was like, wow, like, this is going to be pretty fun to be a part of. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe, I don't think I thought it was going to happen as quick as it did, you know, beating Detroit and stuff like that. But it was definitely fun to be around and see it all, you know, build and turn into something awesome.
And there was a pretty good cast of characters there. I mean, characters. Clearly with, like, Marc-Andre Fleury and Max Talbot and Colby Armstrong. So it's not just a young group.
I sit there and watch listen to Spit and Chicklets all the time.
Yeah, Ryan Whitney.
They tell them these stories. And as soon, like, I'll be listening. As soon as they say something, I think of something else and just start laughing. Or, like, an extra part of the story they're telling. Like, those guys were so much fun. Colby Armstrong and...
I forgot
Talbot
and,
was awesome. Whitney, like, Ryan Whitney, like, people see his personality now, but he was one of the funniest people I was ever around. And then, you know, Ryan Malone was another guy. They would always have a good time. And I think that was cool to see as well. They were, like, really good pals off the ice too. So, the stories that the things that I got to see them do to each other, like, oh, it was so funny.
Are there any stories you can share?
There's a couple I wish I could, but I probably can't.
I understand that you said the locker room sacred, so yeah, something. Yeah, stay in the locker room.
Flower was always the best prankster, and he was always fun. I think people saw it, but one of the funnier things they did was they poured the popcorn in Mike Kadar, the strength coach's car, because he like had him work out or something, and they didn't think so. He got like this brand new, I think it was like a red Envoy or something like that. And
it was probably some kind of Hummer.
They got the keys, and at Mellon they would have these bags that were just like, they were monster bags of popcorn, and they took like 8 of them, ran outside and opened the sunroof, and were just standing on the roof of the car dropping it. And that was one of the funnier ones I've ever seen.
Wish we'd had Kadar's reaction, the old strength coach.
Yeah,
we had his reaction when he walked
out. He was a character
saw that
too. He was, that guy was something. But Flower was always looking to get someone or something. You know, I think he just he never had a bad day. It kind of puts it in perspective. Like he was always, like, you hear how good of a guy he was, but he was every day had a smile on his face. Every day was, you know, walk in, hey, how you doing? Like, what'd you do last night? And, you know, but.
So, like, he makes it fun to come to the rink.
Oh, he makes it so, he made it so much fun. You never knew what he was going to do. Or, you know, even whenever he took all the furniture out of the hotel.
For 24/7.
Benny Lovejoy, that was, like. He commits to.
As you say,
he gets a prank in his head.
Yeah, that's impressive.
He gets a prank in his head. You know, like the other night, he just, when they were in, he went out to Sid's house and hung up Halloween decorations while we were playing.
Really?
Like, that's like, he's still just, he's like a giant kid, you know. But
yeah, hopefully he never changes.
No, I don't think he ever will, that's for sure.
Well, without naming names, then, what are some of the best pranks you've seen? Unless you want to name names, but what are some of the best pranks you've seen in your years around?
Well,
I mean, we know the popcorn one.
Yeah, so there was, I won't say a name, but so there was a, right around Christmas time, usually, like, we'll play a game and then they get 4 days off in between. And there was a guy that was going to fly home right after the game. So he had like a 11:30 flight or something like that to go home.
Like 11:30 p.m.
So after the game, he was going to go to the airport, get on the plane and go home. And he had all his suitcases and stuff. And the guy, he was a young guy at the time. And so I'll say that Ryan Whitney came up to me and said, he said, you got to find his stuff. We know he brought all of his suitcase. You got to find his stuff. So the game was about to start and they're like, did you find his stuff? I said, no, I can't find it. And so I don't know what made me look, but I walked into one of the offices at the arena and I saw the bags and I saw the suit. I saw everything. I said, guys, it's over there. And they just took off running. And they come back, and there's stuff and pucks in his bag. So he would weigh the bag. It would cost more. Like, you know, they're like filling in everything. They sewed
Gabe tape, bubble gum.
They sewed his car keys in his suit pants. So if you look in the pocket, you can just sew it shut and put everything in there. That was a good one, just because it was like everyone wants to get home for the holidays type of thing.
But, yeah.
I saw another guy, he took a hammer and a nail and hammered the guy's shoe to his chain stall. So he went right through the shoe and hammered it down into the, yeah, that was.
that's a really good
one. That's a
risk. Like, for me, I'm like, you're going to ruin his shoes? Like, oh yeah, for sure.
$400 shoes, who cares?
Yeah, that was another good one.
Yeah, well, I've been able to witness a few where they hang the clothes from the rafters.
Yeah, that was. I was somehow looped into that one. I mean, that was Flower again. That was like he. I remember the first one being Simone Dupre.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
It was like his first call up or whatever, and Flower comes running in the equipment room, and he has just an armful of clothes in his arms, and he's like, "We need to hang this from the ceiling." So I'm thinking like. Like, great,
just
like,
the roof.
Just looking up, and he's like, no, above the ice. I'm like, so he's like, I need hangers, and he I got him some hangers. He dressed it all up. He wrote on it, and he was like, let's go. So I'm like, Flower, we got to find someone to do that. I can't just go up there and do it. He goes, let's go. So I'm running down, see one of the Zamboni guys, and I'm like, hey, can you take us upstairs? We want to lower this over the ice for practice. And you go up to the catwalk and it's high up there.
Oh, yeah.
And they just have a rope and they're like, we tie it up and drop it over. And Flower's got to be on the ice in like 15 minutes. So we're all the way up high and we got to run all the way back down. And
I can just imagine just sprinting.
That was a good one. People like that one.
Oh yeah, and the same kind of thing happened with Schultz too, right? When he had his first practice, I remember his gear was hanging from the rafters too.
Yeah, there's Flower. That became Flower's like go-to.
Yeah,
just harmless, and I did make sure that the guy's phone and stuff was not in. I don't need that to happen. But
I was just waiting for the guys to do a line rush and have these pair of pants just like float down. Like if they got unhooked, just like float down to the ice. Somebody skates over them.
Someone get hurt and fall. Oh, and there we go.
But. Remember they did that Dupre? I forget where we were on the road somewhere. I think it was Anaheim, where all the guys came out in their suits and he had just like this T-shirt on.
Yeah.
And we were like in shorts. I'm like, "Where's your suit?" He's like, "I don't know. Somebody stole it."
He just accepted.
Yeah. He's just like, "It is what it is."
The small things they do to like the young guys, I think, hysteria. It cracks me up. Like I think it's awesome. It's so harmless.
Yeah,
but
it breaks
you
in,
know,
right?
It's just funny.
It makes you feel part of the team, too, I feel, if you're a young guy. And Marc-Andre Fleury has been around for a decade, and he's pranking you.
Flower, he once taught me this trick to, you take the top off a toilet, off the back,
you take the top off,
you pull the hose out, that fills the top up, and you put the lid back on, but you set it facing out. So when you flush it, it just shoots out. And he was just getting guys like crazy. So the funny part is,
Perron, right?
He got so many guys with it. And he's showing me. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. So he sets it up and he flushes the toilet, and it's like shooting out pretty hard. But it's even better whenever you take the lid off, because the hose goes straight up. It's shooting straight up in the air. It's such a funny prank.
That is a good one.
Yeah, they were watching something in Perron's room, and he went in the bathroom, and they just like left.
Yeah.
Just like peaced out. They should have known something was up then.
Oh, it's so funny. Like, that guy, I don't know where he comes up with this stuff, but that was a good prank. I used that for a while, guys.
Did anybody ever get Flower back?
I
feel like he's gotten so many people. Everyone's afraid.
I don't think guys would, because he'll take it so far.
Yeah.
He just won't stop. I remember they got James Neal was doing the NHL 36, so the cameras were falling around for like 36 hours or whatever, and they so Flower comes running in and he has a armful of water, just regular, you know, Dasani water bottles, and he has like eight of them, and he's like, "Tex, during the game, can you drill a hole and run the skate lace through the bottles?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Okay, I'm gonna get Neeler after the game." So, you know, the next like 20 minutes, I'm sitting there drilling holes in these water bottles and running the line through.
This is your job, by the way.
Yeah, this is what I'm getting paid for.
Holes in water bottles.
Yeah. So. After the game, like, he gets undressed fast. Like, he's out of his gear. He's like, "Where is it?" So he goes, "All right, meet me. Go the long way and meet me out at the parking garage." So I was like, "Okay." So he goes kind of walking out, pretending like nothing's wrong. And I'm carrying, like, a bag full of water bottles with a string tied to him. And we go out there, and he crawls under Neeler's car. And he's, like, on his back like a mechanic. And he's just tying the skate lace to something. He probably didn't even know what he was tying it to, but he's tying it. And he goes and tells the camera guys, "You want to watch him leave?" And it was just like, they showed it where he backed up, and he kind of like stuffed him underneath so he couldn't see. And then Neeler starts pulling away, and all the bottles are just falling, trailing behind him. And then they showed Neeler trying to, like, in his suit, trying to get under there. And, like, and then, yeah, I mean, that was just, I don't know how he would think of that.
Yeah, right.
Love that, too, because Neeler's Mr. Cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was funny.
Imagine him in the suit trying to untangle that.
Yeah, that was good.
I love that he was probably thinking about it the whole game, too, Flower. Like, he gets right off the ice, and he's, like, immediately after.
Yeah, he's, like, I don't know how he thinks about that kind of stuff, but. I mean, all those stories that you'd see them do to each other is always fun to be a part of, kind of laugh about it, and, you know, think if guys ever really knew I was involved in some of them, they'd probably, my stuff would be missing.
Oh, I'm sure.
No one did, so.
Hey, you're just the messenger, man.
Yeah, just, you know, do whatever these guys need is kind of the way it works. So.
What are some of your favorite memories, then, during your time with the team? I know these pranks, like, come to mind, but.
Obviously,
I heard a rumor. Then in 08, when Detroit won the cup, you got to drink out of it. Is that true?
Yeah, that was. Well, you never know. Like, you never know. And, you know, my dad won two of them. So you kind of, like, I mean, it's pretty cool. And So we were working at that time, me and Andrew were working the visiting room for Detroit, and they won. And Chris Chelios was on the team, and this guy was like, there was a few guys that I think, you know, before I get into that story, like thinking of Chris Chelios, but there was some guys, every time they would come in, they knew your name on other teams. You know, they might come in once a time, and like, Billy Guerin was that way. Keith Tkachuk was that way. Every time they come in, tags, how you doing? Tags, what's up? Cool. You know, and kind of makes it, it's really cool to see.
That's why I feel like Bill Guerin's the king, mayor of every town we go to.
He knows everyone.
Walking every rink, and it's every janitor.
He would know
every mechanic.
It was
unbelievable.
It was pretty, like,
he knows their backstories, asking about their wives. I can't remember.
And, you know, like, that made that so much fun. You know, Chris Chelios was the same way. You know, he just, and part of it was, you know, they knew who my dad was and stuff like that. So, I doubt they really knew my first name, but everyone knows tags. So that, I mean, they made it, but it was, they did it, and that made it fun. Chelly was the same way. And after they won, we were kind of cleaning up and they're partying in the room, and we were kind of just sitting there waiting for them to leave. So I had to go to high school the next day. And we're covered in like champagne and like, you know, whatever. And Chelios had it, and he said, he's like, hey, tags, come here. And he's holding it, and he's like, here. So we got the drink out of it, and, you know, I don't know if that was good. It worked out, but, like, I mean, it was cool.
It was a good point, though. You never know.
Yeah, it was really cool to see. It was really cool to see, and, you know, the fact that they even were, like, you know, thought that about us was pretty cool as well.
I mean, luckily for you, it became a four. You think it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Yeah. It becomes a fourth-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah, right. Then the next year,
But the next year, were you working with the Penguins, or were you working with the visiting
team? I was with the Penguins still. I wasn't full-time still, you know, in school and in college and stuff. But I was out there and, you know, got a picture of holding the cup over my head. You know, that was pretty cool to see. That was neat. And then,
I was gonna say, it has to feel different when you're, I mean, obviously you're just kind of in the room for the Detroit one, but for the Penguin one, you're there with them pretty much every step of the way. I mean, you see them from training camp, through a coaching change, you sort of turn it around and have this historic
run.
Not
to mention the year before, to watch them lose in the final.
I mean, when we lost, I still remember, like, Ryan Malone, like, because it was pretty known that it was going to be his last year, and he just, like, him sitting in his locker for like hours after the game, like, so you got to see what it was like for one group, but
sides.
See how, you know, how important it was to the team that lost, you know. And then the next year to end up back there again and win, like, it was neat to see it all unfold. For sure.
So what other memories stand out? Besides, obviously, we know the cups are obviously big.
The Winter Classic in Buffalo, that was pretty neat, the first outdoor game.
Because you had no idea. You were kind of the test dummy on a lot of these things, for the Penguins are, the first outdoor game.
And to see how it's involved, I mean, now we've done five. We did two at home, three on the road, right?
Yeah, so
we've done five to see how it's evolved and stuff like that. But the first one was pretty neat to be a part of, becoming full time, traveling and stuff like that. It was probably, I think this is my seventh year now. So, right after college, started working full time. And so that was pretty neat when Ray Shiro kind of offered me that. And,
is that kind of the direction you wanted to go? I mean, you, college grad, I mean, there's a million different things you could want
to do. The thing that, to be honest, it was playing football, I got hurt, I blew my back out, and so all my buddies were still playing football, and I was just kind of like, you know, sitting at home, you know, so I kind of approached the Penguins like, hey, I don't need to get paid, but I want to be around, you know. You go from one locker room to the next, almost, so right. It kind of just was like, you know, just have something to do while my buddies were all practice or games or something like that. And, you know, from there, I just haven't stopped. I always tried to learn something. Dana would always, I'd always learn how to do things, or, you know.
Did Dan kind of take you under his wing a little bit?
Yeah, he showed me a lot, and showed, you know, even just to learn how to sew. Like, that was for the first kind of time I ever learned how to sew. And I learned and just started, you know, repairing, like, the socks. You know, I just kind of started doing it, and, you know, learn how to sharpen skates, you know, learn how to fix, you know, equipment, and, you know, and it just, I was just kind of just kept going with it and going with it, and, you know, started to fall in love with, you know, especially, like we talked about, being around the room. Like, that was, you know, being, you know, I can't even describe it, but it's just, you know, going there versus going to sit at a desk. I don't think now I'd be able to go sit at a desk, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, just kind of, I just took off, and still here, so he must be doing something right.
It's interesting because I was talking to Brian Rust, who, you know, injured himself blocking a shot with his glove, and he was asked if he would do anything differently, and he said, I wouldn't be here if I played any differently. I just have to have more protection. He said he was working with the equipment staff on having more protection. I mean, how many, I guess, adjustments do you have to make for these guys? And, you know, are some guys more needy than others and things of that nature? Obviously, you're working, I know you're talking to, for example, talking to Hornquist a lot today about skates and stuff like that. Like, you're always getting feedback and stuff from these
guys.
Yeah,
I think, you know, in a way, it's like, you know, we can only, you know, talk to these guys. Our job is to, you know, make sure they can go out and play, but it's also, it's turned even more so to, like, protecting them. Shot blockers, extra padding and stuff like that. Like, you see, they're starting to, like, the helmets are a big thing now. Mm-hmm. But the small things that go on, a guy breaks his finger, you know, figuring out a way to keep him playing that, you know, that the doctors are okay with. You know, that's kind of turned into a bigger process now. You know, Brian Rust, you know, blocks a shot, and he blocks shots all the time. So we kind of, you know, our staff, we like look at him like, why don't you do something? Like, this is like, it's your, like, that's all you're trying to block shots, but you're not protecting yourself in a way.
Yeah.
So, you know, try and say, well, we can do this if you don't like this, you know, if this pad might work, this pad, or, you know, anything that these guys can want, we got to just figure out a way to do it and make it so that's all right for them. You know, Brian might be different than Brandon Tanev in a way to protect something, or the way they block a shot as well. You know, like Tom Kunackle was a big one. That guy would just eat pucks all the time.
All the time, yeah.
You know, finally it was just like, buddy, we got to figure this out. Like, you know, like, there, we can protect. It's still going to hurt, but, like, we can protect you a little bit better.
Right.
And once you kind of, like, talk to them a little bit, then they want to do it. So, but that's a fun, that's what I love. I love being able to figure something out, you know. Guy has something wrong, you know. Dr. Vias will come and say, you know, we need to protect this for this guy. And it's like, all right, how are we going to do that? And you figure out a way to do it. You know, learn different ways from other teams on the way they would do something. You know, I think even like the camaraderie around the league with the equipment managers, it's like people never really know about the friendships that you have, but we learn from each other, and that's the cool thing. So, figuring out a certain pad that might work better, or a company can customize this, you know, it's word of mouth almost. So every day it's something different.
And we talked about that with Dana a little bit, how, for example, when there's a trade that goes down, you guys, the equipment teams work with each other to kind of get the equipment together, and you're probably calling them up saying, hey, does he like this stick? Does he like this, you know, blade cut, whatever it might be? And, and you have those kinds of friendships and bonds in that small circle of equipment managers.
Well, it just happened today with Goodbranson.
Yeah.
You know, him going to Anaheim. And oftentimes, you know, the equipment guys are talking before the players, and the deal's done, you know. We know about it, and he's going to Anaheim to play. They're on a road trip, so they need, you know, pants, they need gloves for him, you know, jersey for him. So they're, you know, it's kind of like, we got to figure this out right away. Today being Friday, tomorrow's going to be tough. So Yeah, it's different. Everyone, you know, we're all here to help each other out at the end, you know. We've traded with Anaheim a few times, so it's kind of, you know what's going on. Coordinate, like, we had to coordinate, you know, it's new sticks. We've been on a, you know, 5 days, we've been gone, so
right,
make sure that Gutty has what he needs to go there and play, you know, trying to help these guys make sure they don't miss a step. So yeah, it's this was an easy one compared to Bukestad and McCann last year.
Oh my gosh, yeah, what was that like? I mean, we all saw the video of the two of them running into the building, but I mean, when they got in the room, you guys had to have everything ready to rock for
them. I remember it was like 10:30, you know, it was probably 11 a.m.
Yeah, because it was after the skate.
It was after morning skate, and they came in and said we made a trade, and I think it was Brassard and Sheehan. We're going to Florida and Bukestad McCann. And initially, I was kind of like, well, they're not playing tonight, so yeah, well, that'll be fine. We'll get them tomorrow. And they said, no, they're playing tonight. And I'm like, all right, now we got problems. So Teddy Richards is the equipment guy in Florida, and you know, immediately we called him and got all their...
Also a former Penguin.
Yeah, he was here for a few years. Yeah. We called him and, you know, got the sizes, style of pants, style of gloves, you know, it was the big one, helmet. And then I remember that day because it was snowing really bad. And so I took our jersey, you know, grabbed the jersey off the shelf to go take it over to Pro Knitwear in Brentwood and get them to put the jersey on and or the name and number on it. And it's basically like, all right, you guys have to have this done today, and we need this in a few hours. And you know, something we could do, but they're just, you know, they're able to do that. So
worst comes to worst, some duct tape. And
yeah, so then it was just like, now we just got to wait for these two guys to show up. You know, they're going to be here at 5:30. No, 6 o'clock, still not here. 6:30, still not here.
Warm-ups
6:50,
are over.
It's like they're running in, trying to get them, like, I remember Bukestad still had a Florida Panther shirt on because we just didn't know what he wanted.
Like, yeah.
So he played the game with Florida Panther t-shirt on underneath and whatever. But that was a big one for sure.
Going back to a little bit of working with guys, obviously over the years you have to gain players' trust. You know, how do you think you've kind of built those relationships with the guys and gained that trust where, you know, if you're like, hey, let's try this different glove and try this different skate and maybe we can protect you this way. You know, how do you kind of go about that?
I think it's just, you know, being around for so long, I think it's kind of, in a way, like, you know, it's something that it needs to come from them in a way. You know, you can't push these guys to do something, but, you know, in a way they are almost trained to rely on you for that kind of stuff. So in their mind, it's like the equipment guy will know what to do. But everyone's everyone is different, so you do have you do need to give input. I'm still pretty young, so I think I can relate to guys differently than, you know, other guys can. But I think the biggest thing, you just gotta be honest with them. Like, no, this, what you want me to do isn't gonna work. You know, in a way, I'm not afraid to tell them that, and I think they respect that too. You know, they might not always be happy, but as long as you're honest with them, you know, they kind of respect the fact that you are being honest with them. But we've also been lucky to have such like good guys that it's, you never really have, you hear horror stories sometimes of other teams. You know, like, there's been guys that would change a glove after every shift, you know, and it's I don't know if that's really good matters, you know, whatever.
I think that would hurt you more than help you.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. Some guys are finicky with their gear. Other guys, you know, they don't care at all.
You ever have any equipment malfunctions? Maybe mid-game or anything like that where you've had some horror stories?
We've had a few. I don't know. I mean, nothing extreme. Had a few, you know, a couple skates break or something like that.
Yeah, typical
steel
stuff.
Fall out.
Yeah. But,
nothing that really jumps in my mind. It's kind of smaller things in the in between periods that, you know, get you all fired up and stuff. I actually had a microphone fall off once that I put on.
Was that Steve Sullivan's?
No. I don't even know who it was, but I remember just seeing like the battery pack dangling as I skated down the ice, and I was just like, oh my God.
I think it was Steve Sullivan, Well, because I was talking to that with the In the Room guys, and it was the Penguins were on a power play, and turned it over, and it was a 3-on-1 coming back, and he was skating back and dangling, and he grabbed it and just ripped it and threw it to the side.
Oh, yeah. It was like, yeah, that's, you hate to see that one.
So you're the guy in charge of that, though, the ringing of the mic.
So all the fans have you to thank for the mics they get to hear.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. Our In the Room guys just pick the worst days to put mics on people.
That's what they do best.
Yeah. No, it's...
we love them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that came to be. That it's kind of changed every year. Now we got these little pouches that we put on everyone's shoulder pads to make it easy to put them in.
Dude, that's how you adjust.
It hasn't nothing's fallen out.
Knock on wood.
Who knows?
You said you got a lot of friends that play hockey. Are they bugging you for equipment? I'm sure they're bugging you for tickets and stuff.
You know, it's like people.
By the way, I need a goalie stick.
Yeah, people. The things that people think that I can't even describe how many people are like, hey, you think, what would it take to get Sid's jersey? And it's like,
it doesn't work like that.
Are you serious? Like, can I have your house? I don't get it, tickets is a big one, but hockey equipment's a, do you have any extra pairs of skates lying around? And it's like, no, I can't say that I do. Sticks, a lot of people want sticks. And I mean, I think with any job, you probably get the same question.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mine just happened to be the same thing over and over again.
Cool.
And just finally, when we'll leave with this, we talked about all the players you've dealt with, and who are some of the, I guess maybe your favorite players that you've worked with over the years, and some of the guys that have made an impression on you in your 13 years doing this?
Well, right off the bat, Fleury for sure. I mean, he was one of a kind. Paul Martin and James Neal were two guys that I was pretty close with.
They're pretty
still
fun.
Talk to a lot. Sending texts, how are you doing, stuff like that.
James Neal is having a hell of a season right now.
Yeah, about time that guy did something. Brooks Orpik was another guy that always kind of stayed in touch, was always very nice to me, family, and, even when he went to Washington, still kept in touch with him a ton. I would also, Sid, even though, watching that guy day to day is pretty cool. Like, he's one of the most grounded people you'll ever meet. He's a friend too. Like, he's just you hear, everyone will tell stories about how good of a guy he is, but like, people really don't know how good of a guy he is.
Yeah, it's hard to really get that across, I feel, sometimes.
And how he like looks out for everybody on the team, young guys, all the trainers, he's always, always looking out for us. And so he's definitely someone that, and just to see how he's changed,
Yeah, you were there when he was 18.
Yeah, see just how, good he is, too. It's neat to, we're always keeping his equipment fighting, so dealing with him a lot on that. And, you brought up the trust thing. Like, he does trust all of us on things that we know we need to do, and that, so that's pretty neat. But those guys are pop right out of my head for sure. We just saw Ryan Malone the other day in Minnesota. He was always a treat. But you hear Witt talk, it's so cool to see that, how those times you never really thought about the stories until they start telling them. And see, them all stay in touch. It's very lucky to be in this position, that's for sure. I don't take it for granted. Who knows what's next, but it's definitely something that I wouldn't give up.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time and talking with us. Thanks, Tags.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Thanks to everyone out there for tuning in. The Scoop Podcast. We'll be back with another episode when we turn the calendar over into November. A couple coming at you in that month. But in the meantime, do want to thank John Taglianetti, the Associate Head Equipment Manager for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Also want to thank Sam Kassan and everyone out there for listening here today. I am Josh Getzoff, and this has been the Scoop Podcast presented by PPG.